Hi there, you are warmly welcome to the podcast brought to you by Tote Fantasy. I'm Bruce Millington, and joining me this week are a top team of experts to preview some cracking racing. We've got Graham Rodway and David Jennings from the Racing Post, as well as Tote Fantasy, Jamie Benson. It's Coral Eclipse Day, the first day that the older stars meet the classic generation. Just the forerunners, but an intriguing matchup that could be a race for the ages. The other six TV races on ITV on Saturday are absolutely terrific. Really, really packed with runners, loads of prize money. Really looking forward to seeing who the lads fancy. There's a listed race on Sunday at G-Rod's local track, Chelmsford. We'll be trying to crack the Tote Fantasy puzzle, and we'll bring the all-important naps. So over the next half hour, hopefully loads of wisdom coming your way. We will start with the Sandown card on Saturday. Always a fantastic day, one of the highlights of the year. And the 150 is the Coral Charge. It's a Group 3 and loads of runners for this. Brilliant. Don't normally get 11 for this. It's wide open as well. 6-1 the field. Marshman and Anaf. 13-2 Equilateral and Get Ahead. 8-1 Tiberflow Equality. 10-1 Razzle. 12-1 Bar. David Jennings, we'll start with you. What a tricky puzzle to open up with.
Yeah, it's not easy, Bruce. It's not easy. You could certainly make a case for any number of these. The one that I came down on is Get Ahead for Clive Cox. Interesting jockey booking, Pat Dobbs. He'd never ridden her before. But I just think with Get Ahead, she's one of these sprinters. She's still, I think, reasonably unexposed. She's only had 13 starts. And this season, to me, certainly on an RPR, she's looked better than ever. She bolted up at Haydock in a listed race over six back at the end of May. And then she went to Sean T for that Group 2. An interesting race. Marshman was favoured for it. And she finished ahead of Marshman. She finished second. She was only just beaten. She was only beaten short head. I actually thought she might have got it on the bob first time watching it, but she was just beaten short head by Game Run. It just strikes me that she is improving, Bruce. I think Sandown will be fine. She's only ran there once, but she didn't get any cover that day. And I think she's a chance in an open race. A tentative vote for Get Ahead.
Okay, it is a really difficult card, DJ. And you and G-Rod have difficulty agreeing on two horse races, let alone these big fields. So what's your over-under on the number of the seven TV races that you and G-Rod will agree on? I'm going 2. Over-under.
2.5.
Oh, no, no. That's 2.5. Under.
Yeah, and I'd be backing under 2.5.
Oh, under all day. I'd go under 1.5. No problem. No
personally,
problem.
I kind of hope it's under as well.
Oh, that's really mean.
That was a dig, sorry.
G-Rod, just get ahead, just out of spite there.
I did actually look at Get Ahead quite closely and very, very nearly went for him. But, yeah, I'm glad I didn't now because DJ's on him. So I'm on Tiberflow here, last week's Newcastle winner. The form of his run behind Creative Falls looks like ridiculously good now, doesn't it? Because Tiberflow obviously came out and won since. And Run to Freedom won a race at Salisbury next time when he beat Cardem, who of course went on and won the whatever they call it, Jubilee race. So, yeah, the Tiberflow then came out and won last week at Newcastle, 6 furlongs. Now, of course, a lot of people are going to say the drop in trip's a bit of a concern here, but I'm not sure it is, you know. How many times have we seen this in recent years? Horses go sort of 7 furlongs, 6 furlongs and end up over 5. Highfield Princess, of course, being the best example. I don't think that Tiberflow will have a problem with the distance on this stiff track. The problem could be stall 2, of course, right on the inside rail, and he doesn't front run, so he's going to be coming through the pack. Going to need a bit of luck in running, but if Tom Marquand can pick his way through, I think, yeah, Tiberflow could defy the penalty that he's got for his win last week.
Okay. 4 faults in show jumping parlance for your very first sentence when you said of Get Ahead. I looked at him. Right then. What do you fancy, Jamie?
Oh, God, are we calling out G-Rod for that? I've got no hope here.
What, because for gender identity errors? No.
Yeah, you could say, Bruce, that he made a balls of it.
Well, very much so. Absolutely, yes. Yeah, well done, DJ. Come on, what have you got for us, Jamie?
Gender's a construct, Bruce. You should know that in this day and age. To add some more rubbish to this, I really didn't have a strong opinion at all.
Oh, okay.
It's basically 750 guineas the field, so it's kind of take your pick. I kind of tentatively came down on Get Ahead as well, just because she looks to be an improving filly. There you go, got the sex right.
Okay, and, well done, mate.
Cheers. And yeah, so a tentative vote for Get Ahead, who's improving, and 5 is her trip. Tiberflow, I wonder whether he's yet to prove it at 5, so we'll see. But get ahead tentatively.
Okay, it doesn't seem to get much easier in the 225 at Sandown on Saturday, which is the Coral Challenge. It's a mile race, 15 runners, and 13-2 the field. Perotto is the favourite. Indemnify 7-1. Uzo 15-2. Dutch Decoy 9-1. Skeptic 9-1. Positive 12, along with Silent Film. And it's 14 bar. Plenty of extra places on offer. Some bookmakers offering 5 places. Shop around, as we always say on the show, for not just the best prices, but the best place terms. Graham Rodway, you can go first. Is this a puzzle you feel you've solved?
I hope so. It's another, yeah, difficult race, isn't it? Yeah, no wonder Coral sponsored this card. There's a bunch of really difficult races on it, aren't there? Indemnify is the one that I fancy for Alice Haynes. Has got a good record at Sandown recently with her, and I think she's 2 for 9 at the track. And he's having his first run for her.
At Sandown,
having been sold for £125,000 on the night before Ascot. Now, one day, Bruce, you know, I'd love to be able to go to that Ascot sales the night before and be able to spend, like, you know, an absolute fortune on something that was running at Ascot. I think that would just make me feel like I'd made it, you know. Just,
I think I'd rather be selling one of those horses, given how much they go for. But I'll tell you,
well, £125,000 he went for after that race at Sandown, which was over the course and distance. It was a really good time, so no doubt the fella that bought it must be a time man. The horse that was third, Aryan Power, came out and finished fourth behind Jimi Hendrix in what I think was the Hunt Cup, wasn't it? I get mixed up between a lot of those because they're all sort of similar races, aren't they? Buckingham Palace and all those weird straight course races. But I think it was the Hunt Cup, wasn't it? That what Jimi Hendrix won.
Gender, race titles, who cares?
Yeah, they all blend into one, don't they, when you've been doing it for this long. But anyway, yeah, it was a good time. He's up £5 Indemnify. Trainer does well at the course, and I think that he'll go well again from stall 8.
Jolly good. Thank you very much, G-Rod. David Jennings, who's your fancy for the Coral Challenge?
I'm going to be drinking a little bit of Uzo here, Bruce.
He's such a good horse, him, isn't he? This horse, I'm so glad you've put him up. He never runs a bad race, DJ. Go on, elaborate.
No, and I think Sandown suits him as well. I don't know if you remember the race last year, but in this race last year, you know, Sinjari won it. Check and Challenge was second. So it was a strong enough race. They were rating 105 and 108. So there's a bit of quality there. But Uzo actually should have won it, to be honest with you. Safi kind of went for a gap and didn't get it and had to kind of, you know, stall for a couple of strides. He was only beaten just under a length. And I thought that was a cracking run. And like his format at Sandown is really good. I think it's 2-3-1. He's never been out of the first three and three starts at Sandown. I just think that the way the race are run at Sandown and the way he makes his challenge does suit the track. Last time in the Hunt Cup, like, it was a perfectly respectable run, given he hadn't run since February. I thought he ran some cracking races out in Maidan as well, especially that third to New Kingdom. He seems to be as good as ever. He's running off a mark of 94, which is fine. He's just one of these horses that probably, like, he's 15-2, and I think that's a cracking bet each way. He probably doesn't win as many races as a horse of his caliber off the rating he's running off should. Like, he's only won 4 times out of 32 starts, but he's been second or third 7 other times. I can see him running really well. I'm not certain he's going to win. I do think he's the most likely winner, but I think he's a decent each way play at around 15-2, Bruce.
DJ, could you give Escobar any sort of chance? And the reason I fancy this lovely old boy is that he tends to need a nice big field, doesn't he? And he likes the hustle and bustle. And his 3 runs this year, all been respectable, but all in small fields. I just thought, back in the hurly-burly of a 15-runner round the bend at Sandown, I thought he might have a chance.
Yeah, and you know what? He wasn't beaten far in the Diamond either. And I don't, like, Regal Reality won that. Highland Avenue ran well at Ascot afterwards. And as you say, I don't think a kind of 6-runner race around Epsom, I don't think, would suit Escobar. So, yeah, I certainly wouldn't put you off.
You wouldn't put me off. Thank you very much. Jamie, who's your selection?
I get the Uzo point, and he's very hard to leave alone at off a mark of 94, especially when that Maidan form, as producer Sam Hart will say, gets regularly underrated, but it's quite high quality. My pick at the prices was going to be Intelligent, who's been dropped 4 for his run at Ascot, where he just missed the break. It was a bit of a drifter in the market that day as well, and he's down to a mark of 100, and, you know, he was racing 108 only a few starts ago, so I think that's a very winnable mark. I'd give a shout out to Orban. I don't think this is his day, but he's dropping now. He's down to 96. I'll keep an eye out for him at Goodwood, in the Goodwood Mile that he won last year. He will probably run with credit off the pace here. Maybe dropped a couple of pounds and be bang on for Goodwood. But Intelligent would be my main selection. But yeah, take your pick.
Okay, thank you very much. We move on to the 3 o'clock at Sandown. It's the Coral Distaff, G-Rod, Distaff, Fillies, okay? Right, the trip is 1 mile. We've got 11 runners. And again, wide open look to it. Stenton Glider, 9-2 Fav. And then at 13-2, we've got Bridestones and Magical Sunset. Backseat Dar is 10-1 and it's 14 bar. And it's David Jennings' turn to go first.
Yeah, this is tricky. I was fancying Silver Lady all week and I was disgusted when she wasn't declared. It looked like it was going to be a really good race between Capice and Silver Lady, and both of them were scratched. I'm going to chance Bridestones for John and Tady Gosden. I just get the impression she's a better filly than she's been allowed to show. I was really impressed first time out of Yarmouth. She was keen that day, but she was really impressive. I thought she was definitely a kind of a stakes filly at that stage. Then she bumped into Remarquee form, obviously that has been Frank since at Newbury on her first start this season. And I just wonder, will a race like this just be more her cup of tea? I actually thought, if you look back at the Sandringham, the bare form suggests she didn't run well at all. She finished 12th. But if you actually have a look, she actually traveled quite nicely into the race. And then she just kind of ran into the back of one. And I actually thought she was valued for finishing a lot closer than she did. Now, she was beaten 9 3/4 lengths, but factored into that is, you know, the first four, there was distances between the fourth and fifth. So the rest of them all finished a little bit of heat behind them. But I just think she's better than we've seen so far. She's only ran four times. And it wouldn't surprise me if you saw a career best here from Bridestones. I do think she does have to improve because she's rated £12 inferior to Breach. But I think there's more to come from her. I wouldn't read too much into those form figures of 6.90.
Jolly good. G-Rod, what's your view of this race?
Yeah, well, I was going to tip Breach, but I think that she's an unrunner, according to my site. So now that she's out, I'll have to quickly...
Why did you say you think she is? Why don't you just say
she wasn't just a minute ago, and then I clicked the button and then she dropped to the bottom of the screen on the Racing Post website. So
that's a bit of a curveball, isn't it?
I dislike the name of this race, by the way.
She's out with a vet cert temperature.
Dislike the name of this race, Coral Distaff. We don't call races Distaff in England. You know, it's an American term and we do not use it in England. Stupid, isn't it? Anyway, Blacksea Dar will be the one for me now that Breeg is out. Won very well last time out at Newbury when she really improved for a step up to a mile for the first time. She bred to improve for this trip. And I think a stiffer test at the distance will really suit her. She was very strong at the finish. She's by Lope de Vega. There was a little bit of juice in the ground. I don't know what the weather's doing now at Sandown. Probably
lovely today. No, it's going to be really nice today. The only thing is there is a bit of rain in the forecast for tomorrow, but it'll dry out massively today, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope it's not too quick because Lope de Vega's usually like a little bit of juice and it was good ground when she won at Newbury. But as long as it's good ground, I think that Backseat Dar,
that's it. Not we're back getting there,
aren't we? Yeah, would be the one now that Breeg is out.
Okay, and Jamie, who's your tip?
I'm going to keep it brief. I did like Magical Sunset at the prices whilst Breeze was in because I was against her. She'll now be into sort of 4-5-1, which is a bit tight, but I still think she's got juice there because I was mad impressed and mad at Ascot when she was eighth on the far side behind Coppice in the Sandringham. That was off a mark of 102. She won her race by a distance, and it was devastating at the price to see her get beat. But you know, you go back to her debut and she beat Sakir, so you know, there's a proper class horse in there, and I think that she could be good enough to get the job done here.
Blimey, I'll keep it brief, he says, and then delivers the Gettysburg address.
It was right. I'm channeling my inner DJ.
Exactly, yeah, that was out of his play. But let's move on to the highlight of the day. It's the 3:40 at Sandown on Saturday. Coral Eclipse, always a great race. 1 mile and two, the trip. Just the four runners, unfortunately, but two very good ones indeed. Paddington favourite at 11-10 after his really impressive win in the St James's Palace. At Royal Ascot, Emily Upjohn 5-4 after her really impressive win in the Coronation Cup at Epsom. And then we've got Dubai on her at 11s. And West Wind Blows completes the field at 25-1. Obviously, note that Frankie's farewell tour has hit the buffers for this one. He's been banned for whip use, and so William Buick steps in on Emily Upjohn. Let's find out who the lads fancy. You're going to go for one of the big two or take a chance on one of the outsiders, Graham Rodway?
Yeah, it's a fascinating race, isn't it? You know, you've got two real tip-top horses there, Group 1 horses, Paddington and Emily Upjohn. But it's almost certainly going to be tactical, isn't it? There's only four in it. West Wind Blows, you would have thought, would be the one that's going to make the running. He certainly was bang there all the way when he won at Longchamp two runs ago. The problem, of course, is Jamie Spencer's riding, and he's one of the best front-running jockeys around. He won't be blasting off at a million miles an hour. You know, he will be trying to steal this off the front end, so it could get very, very messy. I hope it doesn't, because I want to see a real shootout between the big two, and I'm convinced that Emily Upjohn is a better horse than Paddington. No doubt about that. She was wildly impressive last time. Of course, when beating Westover, we know is top class himself. He had finished second behind Equinox only previously in Dubai. So I remember going into the St. James's Palace thinking, God, this is a weak St. James's Palace. And yes, Paddington won it well in quite a tidy time. But nevertheless, it was still a very weak St. James's Palace. And Aidan O'Brien always runs his best horses in the British 1000 guineas. And he didn't bother running Paddington. So maybe that's because he was late starter. Nevertheless, I think that there's a huge gulf between the first two. And I wouldn't have him anywhere near. I wouldn't have Paddington anywhere near favourite to beat him. The biggest worry with Emily Upjohn is if they go no pace, she can race very, very freely. And if she pulls her chance away, she obviously won't win. So it's a messy race that I won't bet in, but I think Emily Upjohn will win it.
OK, David Jennings, what do you make of it?
Interesting. Graham, what price do you think Paddington should be?
I'd have him close to sort of 7 to 4, 15 to 8. I'd have Emily Upjohn much, much shorter, probably about, 4 to 5.
Interesting. This is fascinating. I don't fancy Westman Blows at all. I don't fancy Dubai Honor whatsoever. So that leaves two. I've got rid of the two rags. I've been going over this race in my head all week. And I'm just reading Johnny Deneen's column, which is in the paper tomorrow. And he's similar to me in that when you're looking at a race, you have to try and visualize how it's going to be run. And his thoughts, not to spoil it for readers tomorrow, but his thoughts are that basically Buick is going to sit last and that Moore is going to dictate the race probably in second, which I would agree with. He'll probably sit on the tail of Westwind Blow. So I think tactically it's going to be very interesting. But I have a theory with Emily Upjohn, and it might be stupid and I might be made to look very foolish. But while, you know, her last three performances have been over a mile and a half, her last four performances have been over a mile and a half, she's beaten a short head in the Oaks. And then she obviously won on Champions Day and she won the Coronation Cup. I actually think she's a better filly over a mile and two, which is going to sound absolutely madness. But I think it was her turn of foot in the Coronation Cup that won her the race. Like when she accelerated and the camera angle was side on at Epsom, it was breathtaking. It was probably one of the moments of the season, to be honest with you. And at that stage, I thought she might win five lengths. And she kind of won by a length and three quarters. Now, she was always going to win, and Frankie didn't get too stuck into her, like close home and everything. So she was always going to win. But I did think it was that acceleration to get her to the front, to get her clear. It was race over in a couple of strides. And I just wonder, will that be her kind of her trump card here at Sandown? I think Buick is never going to be too far away from Ryan Moore here. And it's not a case that she has to sit last. Like when she won her novice stakes, when she absolutely bolted up that day, I know it was only a little novice race, but Frankie, you know, sat on the pace, sat second, took it up two out and bolted up. Now, obviously, he couldn't do anything about it in the Misadora, but she kind of was, you know, she was prominent and she was keen that day. So I don't think she necessarily has to sit last. But the key thing with Emily Upjohn is I think she's grown up. I think she's learned how to race properly. And at Epsom, she raced properly. And I always said last season, when you looked at the Oaks, when she missed a break, when you looked at the Misadora, I said to myself, when she actually does grow up and learn to race, my God, she's going to be nearly unbeatable over a mile two. And I think that's happened. So for that reason, I think Emily Upjohn will win. But I think it's going to be a hell of a race.
Excellent. Very interesting. Obviously, Jamie, if you do back Emily Upjohn and she's waggling her head in the early stages on a slow pace, that's not going to be much use to. Do you agree with the lads that she's the one here?
Yeah, I do. It was, her run at Epsom was absolutely wild, wasn't it? And the way that she did settle then, admittedly off a stronger pace than she'll get here, was mighty impressive. And maybe she's just growing up. There is a concern that if they do go a dawdle, that she will be too keen. But I think she probably has the class here. I mean, I think it's a little harsh to maybe write off the St. James's Palace form already. You know, you had the Irish Guineas winner beating the English Guineas winner with the head second French Guineas winner, French Guineas runner in fourth. It's pretty hard to knock that in terms of a three-year-old, a mile race. You can knock it on the strength of the three-year-olds being bad. That's one thing. But I think in terms of St. James's Palace, it was a pretty fair one. That said, I do still side with Emily Upjohn, so I'm going to row in with the lads. I think she has a class above these, and she could be an absolute superstar. So I hope she goes and wins. But yeah, geez, it'll be a tactical, fascinating one. And, you know, just because it's a four runners doesn't mean it's a bad race.
Absolutely not. No, very much looking forward to it. Well, hopefully that has whetted your appetite for a really, really interesting Sandown card. There are also three superb races on Saturday from Haydock Park on ITV, and we will preview those in just a jiffy.
Tote Fantasy, proudly sponsoring the Racing Postcast. Daily fantasy racing with real cash prizes up for grabs. A cross between fantasy football and the play spot. Who's in your stable? Visit tote.co.uk/fantasy to find out more. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the Postcast. Bruce Millington, David Jennings, Graham Rodway and Tote Fantasy's Jamie Benson. We've done the Sandown ITV races. Let's do those three at Haydock. Massive prize money, big fields, wide open. We'll start with the 205. It's the Bet365 handicap, 14 runners, 1 mile and six the trip. Not quite sure on the ground yet. You know what it's like at Haydock. It could be anything from heavy to firm. At the moment, they're calling it good, but there is rain forecast. Right. Rogue C is currently favourite at 9-2. Lordship is 5-1. Pledge of Allegiance 6-1. Banderas 8-1. Chill High 10. Galactic Jack and Imaginary World. Midnight Lion 14. It's 16 bar. And Graham Rodway, you're going first. Who wins this?
I'm with Pledge of Allegiance, Bruce. Now, I'm trying to stay ahead of him when I'm handicapping him every time he runs, because I think that he's a typical Prescott horse, isn't he? He's going to end up rated high 90s, maybe in the hundreds. He won at Redcar two starts ago, broke his maiden, then took a huge step forward when winning at Doncaster last time. And you can say he only won by a length, but at the time there, it was very, very good. And he set the pace. So, he was bang on that hot pace the whole way, and he just broke them from a long way out. He was giving weight to the runner-up, who was very lightly race trained by your favourite King Rafe, Campaign Trowel. You know, Campaign Trowel was favourite for that race because he was getting the weight and looks a very good horse himself. I mean, the front two pulled 8.5 lengths clear at a rest, I think it was. So, I mean, I think that form is absolute tip-top. Smashed it up at plus 16 on RPRs, gave it 92. He gets in off 83 here, which means I've got him, £9 ahead of his mark, and I hope that he goes and proves it. So Pledge of Allegiance is the one that I like.
Okay, just to explain that, if you weren't quite sure on the terminology, Graham Rodway is one of the team of handicappers who does the Racing Post ratings. And Gerard, you take care of the middle distance horses, don't you? So this is your wheelhouse, isn't it?
Yeah, well, anything from a mile and six upwards. So it's more stayers. Right. But yeah, okay. I mean, this is my sort of area. And it's, you know, as I say, there's certain horses when you're coming through, that when you're watching these races and you're handicapping them, you think, oh, yeah, you know, that one's going to go through the ranks. And you always want to be sort of handicapping them ahead of their mark so that next time out you can get them top. And that's what I tried to do.
Okay, right. Well, it's going to take quite a strong case from you, DJ, to usurp Pledge of Allegiance from our Tote Fantasy team. So do you want to have a go, or are you going to just let G-Rod have the final say?
No, I let G-Rod have a say on this particular position on the team, because mine wouldn't be as strong as G-Rod's. I do think Pledge of Allegiance is obviously interesting. It was a strange ride from Derek Keenan, because he went off pretty quick. And Campaign Trail, who I thought was well handicapped that day at Doncaster, looked for all the world that he just had him maybe a furlong and a half out, and then Pledge of Allegiance quickened up again. I do think it was a desperate race apart from those two. So for that reason, I'm kind of just willing to let Pledge of Allegiance run. I think we're only scratching the surface with Banderas, to be honest with you. Neil Callan is having a charmed existence at the moment. He's absolutely flying. He's riding out with skin. And with Banderas, we've only seen him four times. And he is a bit of a talking horse. Like he went off 4-6 for a novice stakes at Sutherland on the second start, having finished fifth at Newcastle first time out. Now, it was an eye-catching fifth, but it was like the feat was completely out of the question that day at Sutherland. And he just didn't do things right. He looked a bit slow. Then at Newbury, he was beaten ahead by Klondike, having travelled best of all. He did get his act together to win snugly enough, even though it was just a neck at Chester last time. And the further this horse goes, the better he's going to be. He's got cheek pieces on, and I think that's a big positive, because I think he does need a little bit of visual aid. And I think, honestly, a mark of 80... I think if we're doing a podcast in about 2 months' time, I think we'll be talking about Banderas maybe running a stakes race. I do think he is going to be a smashing stayer. Whether a race like this comes a little bit early in his education, you know, it's his first handicap, I'm a little bit worried about that, but it's a mark of 80. By God, Banderas is better than an 80-rated horse.
Okay. By the way, I meant to speak to you. I haven't spoke to you since you wrote that piece about the that brilliant feature you did from the car park, the car park after parties at Royal Ascot.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it. The world's friendliest person you are, DJ, and you bottled out of going to see Michael Owen. How could you do that? He would have loved to have spoken to you. What are you doing, man?
Oh, you wouldn't have had a clue. Wouldn't have had a clue who I was.
Of course he would. Don't be ridiculous. Of course he would.
Honest to God, Bruce, I tried to put that on paper. Just it was the most bizarre situation where I was in the press room and I knew I had to go out, and like I was doing everything to put it off. Like I wanted to be out there around maybe before the last race, but I was like, you know, going to the toilet and like getting a cup of tea. I literally, it was the last thing I wanted to do, because you're going out and you're kind of a fish out of water. And
that's a brutal assignment, that, DJ.
And right. I just did it. And then it's so funny, like when you're in that situation and you have to go up talking to people and trying to find, you know, familiar faces and people that people would recognize. And then luckily enough, Cornelius Lysart was there, and I explained what I had to do. And in fairness, it was a perfect time to meet him, because he was like, oh, I'll introduce you to William Muir. And William Muir was lovely. And then it's like you have your first drink and then you're away. But yeah, it certainly wasn't. I wasn't in my comfort zone, Bruce.
But you bottled the Michael Owen chat, yeah?
Oh, completely. I seen him on the way in, and I was like, God, if I had two drinks, I'd definitely go over to him. Because, like, Michael Owen was my hero growing up. I'm a Liverpool fan. I know he went to He was my hero, because not only was he a footballer, he was a footballer that was into horses. This is unbelievable. Right. Like, so I seen him on the way in. I was like, right, I'm going to go over. And then, lo and behold, I was walking out, and he was 4 yards away from me, and I was like, "Ah!" And then
you should have done, mate. He's a lovely man. He's really friendly. He would have loved to have spoke to you, I'm sure. Honestly, DJ, next year. Right then. Anyway, we've digressed massively. The 205 at Haydock. Jamie Benson's fancy is
Struth for Charlie Johnston. Also, by the way, DJ, I'm pretty sure Mike Lowen will write in his blog late that day. I bottled it. I was going to say hello to DJ. I was 4 yards ahead of him.
He would have done. Yeah, he would. He would.
Struth for the Johnsons. Everything went wrong at Ascot last time. He chased that mad Ross Orion pace in the mile 4 handicap, and before that he was a very progressive horse over a mile 4 and a mile 6, and I think return to that progression will see him run very well. He's 16-1. I think that the market has overestimated that performance last time, and underestimated his form, and I think he goes very well off a mark of 95.
Jolly good. The 240 at Haydock is the bet 365. Lancashire Oaks, G-Rod, Fillies and Mares. Mimikyu is 6-4 favourite. Sea Silk Road 9-2. Aristia is 11-2. Time Lock's 8, and it's 14 bar. We got 9 runners, and David Jennings is going to tell us whether he fancies the favourite or whether he's going to look elsewhere.
Oh, no, she just wins. I think she'll win. I actually thought last time at York she ran a remarkable race. I actually thought she probably should have won. I'd say if Kieran O'Neill was watching it back, it was just in those last couple of strides. If he just was a little bit stronger, I'd say she would have got up. But look, for all the world that she was going to do it, but she just didn't. I wonder, is a mile 6 just stretching her a little bit far? I know she was very impressive when she beat a Shad at Doncaster last September, but I do think this trip, and there looks to be a bit of pace on as well, is exactly what she wants. She's rated 110, but I think she's getting better. I think she's getting there. think everything in his is in our favour. I think the track will suit. I think the ground will suit. Robert Havlin is back on board. He won in her a couple of times last season. Yeah, I think it's just boring, Bruce. I think she's the best filly in the race, and I think she'll win.
David Jennings fancies Mimic You. G-Rod, will you be mimicking David Jennings?
Yeah, we're off and running now, aren't we, Bruce? We're just going to agree now on a lot of them. So, yeah, Mimic You for me, too.
We're on two now.
We are up to two.
One race to go.
Mimic
You. Last time, obviously, thought it was going to win. Just got beaten a short head by River of Stars. Pair were, I think, clear, weren't they? Yeah, a little bit anyway. It was a nice reappearance. I gave her the 1.11 that she's got the Racing Post rating last year, as we were talking about when she won the Park Hill. Thought it could have been slightly higher. It's nevertheless still the best piece of form on offer if she can run to it. She should improve for that first run back at York. The only worry is if Aristia comes right back to her best, because she, of course, was Group 1 filly last season. And she's running off level weights with Mimic You here. The likes, Aristia was going up against the likes of Nashua and not beaten that far, so you know that form would give Mimic You something to think about. But she obviously has only run a couple of times since and has been off for a long time before she got thrashed first time up by Free Wind finishing last, so got a bit to prove Aristia, whereas a Mimic You is coming off a better run. I think she can improve for it. She's only four. John Gosden himself's got an amazing record in the race. He's won it 9 times, 4 times in the last 10, so yeah, straightforward.
Okay. Do we have our Henrik Larsson Tote Fantasy Team banker, Jamie?
Well, I'm not sure we do, just because we won't be able to afford Paddington and... Emily Upjohn and Mimic You.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know whether the lads have another option in this, or they want to go with one of Dubai Honor.
What's the deal with this game then? Do you just want us to pick losers, is it? Is that what it is?
No, but you've got
a budget. We can't afford him, so we've
got a budget. You've got a budget, DJ. You can't just splash out on all the big guns. So if we had Mimic You and Emily Upjohn, we'd bust the budget. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Can't have them both.
Are you completely over? Can we go for outsiders in the other races?
Pretty much not.
All right.
Well, yeah, it's almost impossible to do that. You'd have to go for proper 100-to-1 rags.
No, we won't do that. Come on then, who do you fancy, Jamie? Let's throw that into the mix.
Hopefully for my selections, I really don't fancy Mimic You. I think that she's far too short at the front of this against Seasalk Road, who won last time out at Haydock in the Group 3. You know, she won that quite cozily, actually. Aristia, you know, she was coming back. Her comeback run last time was exactly that, just come back run before that. She was winning a Group 1. You know, that's form well above all of these. And then even Time Lock, you know, she was beaten in the neck by Mimic You last season. And she had excuses last time when I thought she was an absolute certainty to win. And she came back a bit lame and a bit sore. So, you know, you can excuse that. And I think all three of them are very interesting. And my play will probably be to lay Mimic You at 6-4.
Who are we putting in the team then?
But yeah, it's kind of up to the lads. The lads had an idea. My one would probably be Aristia.
Okay. Well, G-Rod gave that a mention.
Who does the prices for these horses, Jamie? Is it actually you?
So it's basically an algorithm that takes into account sort of early tissues combined with field sizes. And then I sort of give it a glance over and see if there are any ricks effectively and try and correct them. But yeah.
Okay. So during that glance over, could you make Mimic You a little bit cheaper?
No, we can't. That's what makes the game so interesting this week, because so many people want to put one of Paddington or Emily in and Mimic You. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Put in. All right, what loser did he pick there?
Aristia. Right, let's move on to our final piece of the Tote Fantasy Puzzle. It's the 3:15 at Haydock on Saturday. It's the Bet365 Old Newton Cup handicap over a mile and a half. 16 declared, loads and loads of extra places. I've seen 6. You probably get 7 if you're lucky. La Yackel, currently 5-1. Fav. Cumulonimbus is 7-1. 8-1, Sheer Rocks. 9-1, Max Sood. 11-1, Tumisius Fox. And 12-1, Bar. Jamie, you haven't gone first yet, so you can this time.
Oh, God, you've come to me on my least confident one. I've sided with Cumulonimbus as a horse on the improve and a solid one. But slightly for lack of a better idea, Garcia is a horse that I've followed small off a cliff before, and I think it's probably time for me to give that a break, give up on that project for now. So maybe there's time to back Garcia because it's one time I won't be. But Cumino Nimbus will be in my team, I'd say.
Graham Rodway, who's your selection here?
I fancy Maxud here. I like the form of the Royal Ascot handicaps, even though they all sort of blend into one for me. They're obviously they're obviously very strong races, aren't they? I mean, you know, how many trainers will have lined their horses up for those Ascot handicaps? They usually run at good paces, and I mean, he was beaten into midfield. I think he finished 12th in the end, but he was only beaten 5.5 lengths by Akito Shrushi and. Sorry, one of those, Andy, I can't remember the name of it. Was it Duke of Edinburgh, this one? I think it was the Duke of Edinburgh, this one.
Have you actually got a form book or like access to a website that has all these facts?
No, I just sit there and I see the race in my head. I can see the race happening in my head, but whether it was the Duke of Edinburgh.
It was the Duke of Edinburgh,
Or the Palace of Holyrood House, or the.
No, it was the Duke of Edinburgh.
Lucky,
anyway,
just lucky he doesn't do those race and post ratings, isn't it?
Exactly.
You don't need to know the name of the race, do you? You just need to know the horses that ran in it and what the way they finished. You know,
probably helps, I'd say.
What the race is called is irrelevant, you know. Anyway,
You're a sort of impressionist tipster, really, aren't you? Almost abstract, really.
who is he doing impression of?
Well, someone who hasn't got a form.
So I can see the race in my head now. You know, Maxud's coming through, and he just comes from the midfield and he finishes five odd lengths behind the winner, Akito Shrushi. Yeah, and he's gone down £2 for that. Now, he's still quite unexposed over a mile and a half. Because one of his best runs last season came in a race at Goodwood that was won by what was called Secret State. Again, I've got no idea what that race was called, but it's always a strong race every year. It's at the Goodwood Glorious Festival. It's a handicap over a mile and a half. And he was second to what was called Secret State, right? And my only worry here, Bruce, is are they thinking they'll go back for that race? You know,
Coral beaten by length free bet handicap, as it's been known since the early 2020s.
Yeah, that easily rememberable race. That one. My only worry is whether Huey's got it in his mind, though, we'll just go back. You know, we're going to line him up for a tilt at that race at Goodwood. Goodwood,
77 grand for this one, G. Rogers. Not to be sniffed at, is it?
Exactly. My point, exactly. I mean, if the wind's
now
on.
Now, that isn't your point, because my point is this race is worth 77 grand.
Yeah, exactly. So if they're going to, you know, why wouldn't you overlook it, would you? You know what I mean?
I don't know what you mean at all.
It's a big race in its own right. You wouldn't say, oh, we'll sod the old, what's it called, old Newton Cup off. Yeah. We're running that race at Goodwood, the Coral beaten by a length, blah, 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 handicap or whatever. So anyway, I sort of lost the train of thought, but I think Maxud will win.
Very convincing, G-Rod fans. David Jennings?
And unbelievably, Bruce, the overs have been landed.
No way. But you're not going to say for the reasons G-Rod stated, because he didn't state any reasons.
Yeah, it's funny how you can go about a race and completely in a completely different way and still get the right outcome. Like Graham was multiplying and dividing, and
he went all Mystic Meg at one point. He said, "I can see the race now." He comes five lengths behind, and it was very strange. But go on, I think you're going to give some more logical argument now, aren't you?
Well, it is and it isn't, Bruce. I just think at Ascot and my old buddy Keels, my heart went out to him. I think he was on Maxud at maybe 25s or 33s for the Duke of Edinburgh handicap, as it has been christened, and it was just. Too much, too soon, on too fast a ground for me in the Duke of Edinburgh. Was just, I would have liked to have seen him settle a little bit better and ridden a little less aggressively by Tom Marquand. And it's funny, at one stage, kind of early in the home race, I thought he'd be beaten maybe 10 lengths or 15 lengths. He was only beaten 5.5 lengths by Akito Shrushi. And, you know, as Rodders did say at one stage during that point he would make, he is quite an unexposed horse. Like, he's only had 8 starts. And I will go back to that race at Goodwood last year, because a horse that I followed off a cliff last year was a horse called Inverness. It was trained by Charlie Hills, and I really fancied Inverness that day, and that was a really strong handicap, I thought, at Goodwood. And I even clicked in there earlier today, and I was like, oh my God, where is Inverness gone? Because that was a horse I was really following. He won at Haydock on his final start for Charlie Hills. He went over to Doha and won first time out, and then ran in a Group One where he was just beaten a length by Russian Emperor. So the form of that is quite strong, I think, that Max Sud race at Goodwood. I think he'll come on plenty for that run at Ascot. I think he's a better horse. I think on slightly softer ground at a track like Haydock, I think it's going to suit him. He's been dropped 2 pounds to a mark of 97. He was rated 102 this time last year. He's down to 97. I don't think he's regressing. I still think there's time for him to progress. Love David Egan as a jockey. Big fan of Huey Morrison. Max Sud for me. I just will give a mention to Gatsy. Jamie mentioned him there.
Oh, darn.
I was doing the tipping guide in Ascot on page 3 of the paper, and I actually put him up for the Copper Horse Handicap at Ascot. And it's funny, I actually got reasonably excited turning in. Now, he had been keen in the early part of the race, but they kind of turned in and he switched out. Now, Vauban just went then at that stage. I was like, oh my God, this is going to go really close. And he ended up doing nothing at all. He was beaten like nearly 18 lengths. But the way he travelled through the race suggests to me that he still retains plenty of ability. And don't forget, this is the same Gassi that started 4-1 favourite for the Ebor last year to defy a mark of 103. He's down to 99 now. Mm. He's only ran twice since. He is interesting. Adam Farahar takes off £3, and he's a very stylish jockey, Adam Farahar. He could just suit Gassi. He'd be patient. I maybe wouldn't give up just quite yet, Jamie. I'd stick a fiver on him just in case.
Ah, for God's sake. Right, won't be eating this weekend then.
No, you got to. And I shall be sticking a fiver on you, Ken Glenn, because I love the horse. He's probably a little bit too old, but you never know. Right then, okay, that's the TV action done. Loads more weekend winners, and we'll have a crack at the Tote Fantasy game in just a mo.
Stay ahead of the field with Racing Post Members Club, featuring unlimited access to the Racing Post digital newspaper, exclusive online content, replays from all UK and Irish racecourses, and more. If you're a new customer, you can use the code POST22 to get 50% off your first 3 months of Members Club Ultimate. Head to racingpost.com/postcast to find out more.
Welcome back to the final part of the postcast, sponsored by Tote Fantasy and brought to you by Bruce Millington, David Jennings, Graham Rodway and Jamie Benson. Before we get the naps and look at the Tote Fantasy game, let's see what else the boys fancies. Loads more racing over the weekend, including, excitingly for G-Rod, a listed race at his local track, Chelmsford, on Sunday. So we'll start with you, G-Rod. What have you got for us?
I'll be there on Sunday at Chelmsford. Looking forward to it. I went last year. It was one of the highlights of the whole season at the Essex track. So
is there music afterwards?
There's not this time. No, no.
Did you go to Bananarama with Richard Birch the other day?
Yeah. Birchie and I. Yeah, like we said on the podcast a few weeks ago, we made a date and we were down to see Bananarama at Chelmsford a couple of weeks ago. What a day that was. Ladies' Day. Glorious sunshine. Won the place pot. And then parted the night away to Bananarama. And then afterwards, there was a DJ set by none other than Gok Wan.
So, wow. Yeah,
what a night that was. Is
he good at playing other people's music? Well, it's the most overrated thing ever, isn't it? DJing, particularly now with Spotify. You just do a Spotify playlist, don't you? I mean,
there's a lot of DJs overrated, Bruce.
Well, yeah, I can think of one in particular. But that sounds good, G-Rod. That sounds like a lovely day out. This time it's just about the racing, isn't it?
Yeah, just about the racing this time. But should we start on Saturday with a couple of outsiders picks? 4:02 at Beverley. 4:02 at Beverley. We've got a Stranger on the Shore. Now, I backed this horse last time out when... you've got to check. finished beating a neck. Just behind lightly raced horse of James Fanshawe's. Front three, Paul Clear. Time was pretty strong. Nigel Tinkler, isn't it? And Fame at Manaman teaming up. Yeah, I'm up for that. So I thought that was a good piece of form last time. Stick with that. 7:12. Sorry, I've got to go through it. 7:12 at Nottingham.
All right.
Now, why have I picked this one out? Hold on a second. Find out. Right, yes, sorry. Yeah. Now, when this one ran two starts ago...
Has he got a name?
Sorry, did I not say it? Hello to me. No, hello me. Hello me. It's a mare, so it's a she. So when I backed this horse 2 starts ago at Nottingham, it was quite promising. I can't remember why. But anyway, went on to win next time out at Kempton. Was well on top at the finish that day, and it was a career best race in post ratings. The handicappers only put it up £3, for which it got Harry Burns on board claiming £3. So it is, in effect, racing off the same mark. Joseph Parr is absolutely flying. I think he's got a 20-odd% strike rate in recent recent couple of weeks. And he's got a really good record at Nottingham. He's got like a 25-odd% strike rate at Nottingham. Anyway, I know that no one will be listening to that because they'll be waiting for my Chelmsford tips on Sunday. And in the big race, the 355, the Queen Charlotte Filly Stakes, the biggest race of the year at Chelmsford. White Moonlight is surely the one to be on. She was very impressive last time out when she won at Musselburgh in a race that I think was quite strong. The runner-up was Heredia, who finished second behind horse called Azure Blue. Previously, Azure Blue went on to win the Duke of York. The third in that race was Lady Onyx, and she tipped her and backed her at Carlisle, I think, a week ago, and she ran really well in a listed race there. So I think that form is strong. Saeed Bin Sarur has loads of winners at Chelmsford. Every time I'm there, if there's a Saeed Bin Sarur runner, it's always worth backing, right? And in the last race, the 540 at Chelmsford, Scallywag Bay. Yeah, it's unbeaten on the all-weather, this horse. 2 from 2 on the all-weather. Was very impressive going around a turn last time over 5 furlongs at Lingfield when she ran on her last run on the all-weather. Then last time out at Windsor was beaten narrowly off this mark, just the neck. The return to the all-weather should suit her. Seems really well suited by a fast 5 furlongs around the bend, and she's going to get that at Chelmsford. Let's just pray that she gets a good draw and that she gets declared, of course, because we are... We should make the point that we are assessing these races at Chelmsford before the declarations come out, so we need these horses to get declared. So 5:40 at Chelmsford is Scallywag Bay, and the big race, the 3:55, the Queen Charlotte, White Moonlight.
Okay, you're so erratic, aren't you? Sometimes, like, you barely sound awake, and other times you're the most fluent orator there is. It's very strange. David Jennings, what do you fancy this weekend away from the ITV cameras?
He's on and off the bridle, isn't he? He was on and off the bridle. He was like Dino's Beano there, so he was.
He finished
I
well.
I almost lost my voice then.
I have to say, I had the pleasure of Graham and his lovely wife's company in Ascot on the Saturday.
Oh, lovely.
Enjoyable for a drink. I can't believe he went to a Bananarama concert. That would have been the last thing on my mind, Bruce. But I'm bummed.
Oh, is that one of their songs, Last Thing on My Mind?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I'm not really that familiar with the Bananarama playlist, I must say, but yeah, okay, that was a good one. So, yes. How did what was S Rod like? Was she a pleasant lady? She must be very patient to put up with G Rod.
Yeah. Oh, really, really nice. Actually, how did you get on? You were going for dinner that night, and the guy that was with, so they're with another couple who was one of her friends, and the guy that was with them had like backed a load of winners, and G-Rod was like to me, oh, this is great, like, he's bringing us out for dinner and he's going to pay for everybody. And where did you end up going?
Yeah, well, I mean, we went to one of these places. Now, it will not surprise you that I do not frequent these places very often, but we went to one of these places where they give you like a handful of food. You know, you look at it and you're like, you know, £50 for like the smallest portion of meat that I've ever seen in my life, you know. But it was a very, very nice night. I mean, the fella that we went with had backed Cardem, and he'd backed another 22-1 winner that day, and he's having the most ridiculous day that you're ever gonna see. Some sort of weird strategy of backing 5 or 6 outsiders in a race, and he just happened to hit on a day when virtually all the outsiders won, didn't they? It was just a mad day. And yeah, but I mean, I think I embarrassed myself around the bandstand afterwards. DJ. I always call him DJ Me then. I think I embarrassed myself around the bandstand because I was getting heavily involved in some singing of Sweet Caroline and, you know, all the classics that the band put out. And yeah, I don't think that that they were too impressed with that. But it was a great day, wasn't it?
Brilliant. Right then, DJ, we want some winners. Come on, what have you got?
Very quickly, Bruce, I've got 2 for you at Haydock, would you believe? I hope so anyway. One of my strongest fancies of the weekend. Actually, I better not give it to you because it's my nap.
Okay, yeah, save that.
Okay, My nap is in the 4:25 at Haydock and one other one at Haydock in the 5 o'clock, stepping back up to 7, Catch the Paddy for Kevin Ryan and Kevin Scott. I think is still well handicapped off of Market 91. Ran an absolute cracker first time back at York when stepped up to 7, then was dropped back down to 6 at York, and everything just happened a bit too quickly. Neil Callan kind of accepted the situation as well, but this is a good horse who, when he puts it all together, I think he could kind of run up a sequence at some stage, hoping it's going to start here. So Catch the Paddy in the 5 o'clock at Haydock.
Thank you very much. Right then, Tote Fantasy time. This is your chance to win a nice few quid for just a £7 outlay. It's the fantasy game based on the 7 ITV races. If you go onto tote.co.uk and then click on the Tote Fantasy, it explains it all. Really good fun planning experience. And you've got a chance to top the leaderboard and win a few quid. What you've got to do is simply pick a horse in each of the 7 ITV races, but stick within your allotted budget, which is why you can't have Emily Upjohn and Mimic You. So Jamie's been paying attention to the slightly surreal ramblings of G-Rod and the more cohesive thoughts of DJ, plus his own. And this is what he's come up with as our draft team.
Yeah, so I feel like we're actually reasonably aligned this week. I've got a couple of DJ ones, a couple of G-Rod ones, a few were agreed, and then the Mimikyu saga.
That's right. Now you've got carte blanche. I've got Chemba. Yeah. You're allowed to oppose Mimikyu. That's fine.
So I'll ping through it. So first the Sandown races. So we got 150 at Sandown. I've gone for Get Ahead for DJ. 205 at Sandown. Oh, we've got two DJ ones at Sandown. 205 at Sandown. We've got Uzo. 3 o'clock at Sandown, we're then with DJ, with G-Rod, with Black Sea Dar. 3:40 at Sandown, we were all agreed in Emily Upjohn. 2:05 at Haydock, we've then got Pledge of Allegiance for G-Rod, the master of the RPR stairs. 2:40 Haydock, sadly having to oppose Mimikyu on value grounds and not being able to afford her. So I've gone for Aristia, potentially with the Stewards inquiry on, and hope that she finishes second for the lads, and then gets boosted to first. And then 3:15, both the lads were on Maxud.
Okay, great. So who's the Henrik Larsson? Do we just go with Emily, or do we take a chance with someone else?
I'd suggest the lads either Emily, because she's, you know, the likeliest winner in that list, or if you want to take a bit of a punt, the boys both quite fancied Maxud for various different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, you get extra points for it being a big field.
No, we're going to go Maxud then. We're going to go Maxud, definitely, okay? Yeah, and just tell us about the game. If you are the outright winner, what could you hope to get back for your 7 quid?
Yeah, so you probably win about 700-800 quid.
Loads of people are guaranteed to win, aren't they? What's the threshold?
Yeah, so the top 25% of lists score make profit. So you're never really out of it until the last. And we definitely won't be out of it until the last. I think a couple of winners could be enough this weekend. So.
No, definitely. I'm confident this week. And is there a racing post? Benson. Oh, sorry, DJ, go
Jamie
on, mate.
Benson, if I happen to find out that the winner of tomorrow's competition had Mimikyu and Emily Upjohn in their team, don't bother coming on next week.
Oh. It's all right. I'll see what I can do with the pricing.
Is, you didn't tip enough rags for us to be able to afford both. Okay, I'm happy with that team. G Rod, you okay with that?
How do we usually do again? How have we been doing, Jamie? Have we been getting in the money recently, or have we been not been struggling because I've not been on?
We had a good run, to be fair, there, G Rod, for a while. I think we're in the money 4 out of 5 weeks in a row. Around to the Chester time, but the Chester feels like a while ago now. It's been a lean time, but DJ was playing all throughout Ascot and then finished with an absolute Hail Mary on the Saturday, and I think ended up fourth in the Racing Post League.
Well, there's a Racing Post League as well, isn't there, tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. There's 25 quid to the winner of that, so everyone get involved, link in the bio, all that kind of stuff. No, link in the description, rather. So get involved, 25 quid to the winner of that. And DJ, you had a hell of an Ascot. Winners left, right and Charlie.
Yeah, no, I had an all right Ascot. Yeah, it was almost the most unbelievable week of my life, okay? Because obviously we did the Good Morning Show as well. And two of the days, my banker, one of the days it was Relief Rally, who was beating a schnout in the Queen Mary. And on Saturday, it was Sacred in the Jubilee. And like both of them look like winning and were just literally beaten on the line. So it was almost a fantastic day, but it was a good enough week, yeah.
Good, good. Excellent stuff. Well done, lads. Thank you very much. Let's get the naps before we depart. We'll start with Graham Rodway. Who's your one main fancy this weekend?
I'm going to go for Pledge of Allegiance in the 205 at Haydock, Bruce.
Thank you, G-Rod. David Jennings?
Bruce, I am going to, as I said already, 425 at Haydock. Chartwell House for William Knight and David Egan. It's a 7 furlong handicap. And Chartwell House, to me, is a horse who is finally getting his act together. He kept spoiling his chance by being too keen, too fresh, too free in his races. Last time at Haydock and the time before at Newmarket, we saw a different Chartwell House. I was so impressed with him last time at Haydock, I have to say. He actually made the running that day under Neil Callan. He did everything right. He settled. He travelled beautifully. He absolutely bolted up the Chartwell House. The second that day was Royal Charter. Royal Charter came out and won at Newmarket the other day off a mark of 84 and is now up to 87. Chartwell House, to me, is up to a mark of 91 now. I think this is a stakes horse. I think he's still got a little bit up his sleeve. And if he does settle here, which he should, he's grown up, he's learning to settle. I see an opening show of 9-2 about Chartwell House. I would be more than happy about 9-2 for Chartwell House. I think he'd win.
I live about 5 miles from Chartwell House, DJ. Who is the most famous resident of Chartwell House?
Oh, I should know this, actually, because I remember somebody... Oh, I can't think of it. I remember somebody was interviewed before, and I can't remember.
Okay. Jamie will know. Jamie's an educated man.
I don't know. My granddad.
No, Winston Churchill. Right, what's your nap?
Close enough. my nap is Magical Sunset in the Coral Distaff at 3 o'clock sundown.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much indeed to Jamie, to DJ, and to G-Rod. Thanks also to Sam, the wonderful producer. Most of all, though, as ever, thank you so much for listening to the podcast sponsored by Tote Fantasy. We're back next Friday when we are looking ahead to a jam-packed day of top quality action headlined by the July Cup. Hope you can join us for that. Have a brilliant weekend.